Hello, and welcome to the Three Links Oddcast, your podcast for all things having to do with Odd Fellowship. And now, here are your hosts.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Three Links Oddcast. I am one of your hosts, Ainsley Heilick.
And I'm your other host, Toby Hansen. And Mike is on sick leave right now. The flu has been going around, and Ainsley, you got hit with it earlier in the week, but you've recovered enough to do the show this evening. But yes. Mike is still down for the count, so we're going to let him have the night off. But in the meantime, we are brought to you by our friends at the Heart in Hand Institute. They have all kinds of great books about Odd Fellowship. There's the Odd Fellows Primer, which has taught so many new members how to do things mostly correctly, you know, if they read all the fine print and whatnot. And the wonderful new Emblems of Odd Fellowship. And you know what, Ainsley? I was doing some degree work this week, and there were so many great things that I saw in the degree work that I looked at and said, hey, I know that. I know what that's about. So where can folks get a hold of this Emblems of Odd Fellowship book and find all about it?
Well, you could either head on over to the Amazon and you could search Emblems of Odd Fellowship over there, or you could go to heartinhandinstitute.com and you could purchase it over there. So either way, it is a great little read, and it's got all new original artwork, and I am excited to share that with the world.
I have never seen a more beautiful bundle of sticks. And I have seen the paintings of Titian. So there you go. Well, I've seen pictures of them online. I haven't actually gone to the galleries in Europe. But hey, I tell you what, we've got ourselves a fantastic show all lined up here. We are talking live and direct with members of True Fellowship Lodge number 52 of San Jose, California, the heart of the South Bay. So, Brother Mason, I know you've been on the show before, so I'm going to turn it over to you and allow you to introduce all of the members of your lodge who are joining us.
Thank you very much, Toby. So with me today is our noble grand and my wife, Debbie Wolf, our vice grand, Andrew Crockett, and our grand patriarch and past grand, Deborah Schuler.
Wonderful. Welcome, everyone. So the reason that we asked all of you to appear on the podcast here is one of our favorite things is when we get to talk to a lodge that has managed to somehow pull itself out of the death spiral and begin building and connecting with its community again. So who would like to set the scene and tell us kind of where True Fellowship was a couple years ago?
So being that I've got the longest longevity here with True Fellowship, True Fellowship was a lodge that had, back in the day, 250 active people. The mistake that they made is the members that were in there decided that they didn't want to open it up or keep inviting other people in. So as they passed away or moved away, our numbers started dwindling severely. Just before COVID hit, we're lucky to get a quorum of five people for a meeting. During COVID, I was lucky to get an email from a gentleman named Andrew Crockett, who said, I'm looking to join a fraternal organization that has meeting space. What's it all about? And then COVID hit. We went through, and I guess a year or so ago, we got back in touch. And the rest is history. He just started bringing people in right and left.
So you found a single member who was able to bring a whole new energy into the lodge and then kind of get the ball rolling to get more people to start kind of looking that way and wanting to become members.
We were lucky in that Andrew has, and he's one of our members here tonight, has a membership in several organizations. and the personality that draws them in.
Before he does, I want to give a real short ode of sorts. Okay. So I joined 5 years ago. I liked Odd Fellowship enough. I was active enough to the degree that the lodge was active. I credit Andrew for not only bringing people into the lodge, but for helping me and others already in it to understand just how special Odd Fellowship could be. And I credit him with helping me transform my journey from being just a member who shows up and, you know, to being much more involved and engaged. So now, Andrew, with that introduction.
Yeah, so Andrew, what was it that got you into the lodge?
It's interesting because it was kind of a culmination of factors, because to give some background on who I am and what I brought into the lodge with me, because any person is a nexus point of the communities they participate in. And when I graduated from college back in 2007, it was the Great Recession. And what I was seeing was this increasing polarization in the United States. And I was actively and earnestly interested in how do we resolve this. One of the first places I pursued that was Civil War reenacting, because I figured that conveying the lessons of the Civil War would help inspire people to look for friendship rather than, you know, scorched earth tactics. And what was interesting was that really just blew apart in the election of 2016. Things got real toxic there. And I was grasping for how do we build friendship in the face of this incredible challenge before us of this rising partisanship. And as a historian, I looked to history saying, where are the lessons that we can learn from this? And what I came to was joining Freemasonry, which introduced me to fraternalism. And out of being a Freemason, I ran for office for an office that is administrative only. It's called the Assessor's Office for Santa Clara County. And I ran on a campaign of doing no harm to anyone. Literally, I wanted people to value this office. I saw it as a canary in the coal mine because it's one that frequently people don't even bother voting for. So I was running for this office wanting to have people care and care about our neighbors, care about our government, care about all of these things that are put before us as our inheritances, that if we do not receive them and cherish them, they can disappear. And what happened was, even though I ran an extraordinary campaign against a 7-term incumbent, I got 100,000 votes. And I said, okay, there's appetite for building community that transcends partisanship. Where is there a place where this message would resonate? And I'd reached out to Debbie Schuller before the pandemic, thinking that the Odd Fellows Lodge here in San Jose would be a logical place with this friendship, love, and truth mantra that I remember hearing about from my grandfather, who was past Noble Grand of Wildy Lodge 149 in Modesto, California. And so I saw this as having potential. And of course, a pandemic happened and all these things. But after having run for office, going, okay, let's find a place to invest this social capital that's been built around community building. And when I came to the first Burger Fry late June of 2022, right after the election that same month, I walked in the door, and it was funny because it's like one of my wife's friends going back 30 years was there and welcomed her. They knew each other through the Society for Creative Anachronism, you know, living history. And I come in there and there's Debbie Wolf, Debbie Schuller, and Mason Wolf. And they all just like, who are you two? It's like, oh, you're the one that contacted me via email, says Debbie Schuler. And it's like, so they, Debbie showed me around, Debbie Schuler showed me around the lodge, talked about what they're trying to do. And also they were telling me a little bit about the struggle. So both me and my wife put in an application that evening and said, let's have this place be valuable and serve this community again. And to their credit, they were 100% on board. That is really the thing that made this work, because I did bring the same offer of investing my time in community development to my Masonic Lodge. And their approach was, we have a method, it's working, we want to continue the method, but we'd love to have you continue to participate in what we have. And I'm treasurer at my Masonic Lodge. And now everything's in place for this Phoenix moment of this lodge, because everyone was game to try something new. And that is a precious gift that the other three on this call with us granted me, because it's very rare to have a community that says, let's be social scientists, try things and find out what works. And after having run for office and run a nonprofit organization with my Civil War reenacting group, I had all of these lived experiences and hunches about how do we build this. And we started with improving the marketing. That was the first thing. We took control of the Google listing for our lodge, which took several weeks of nagging Google to get control of. But man, once we got control of it, we were able to revamp the language and keywords search code it so that it would show up when people were searching for halls.
Now, wait just a minute. You're in San Jose.
Yeah.
You could just go knock on the door at Google and say, hey, can you please fix our lodge listing?
There will be a security guard there.
If you can't do it in Silicon Valley, what hope is there for someone in Cedar Valley, Iowa?
The exact same opportunity. It's just a matter of having the people in your lodge go down to the bottom of the listing and submit, claim this as ours, and keep doing that every single meeting you have until they give it to you. Because it's just a matter of nagging them enough until they give it. And we had two listings there, one that we got control of within about 2 weeks. The other one took about 2 months. And once we had both of those, we were able to keyword code it so that we'd show up in listings for people looking for places to rent. Debbie, you were about to step in and say something?
I am saying, he asked about our neighborhood. And unfortunately, in our neighborhood, it's a lot of business on the corner. And then we have several mansions belonging to people that don't wish to be part of our organization, to the point of making our parking restricted. So until we got further away from the lodge hall, you would then get contact, but it's not that kind of a community. So it's now we're starting to get some community in, but at that time it wasn't a viable situation.
One of the other very simple things that Mason thought up very early on in trying to get things going in the lodge, because nothing attracts activity like activity. So he put up blinking lights at the front of the building. So it just says at night, I'm not dead. And it's amazing, because even though that seems very insignificant, it's interesting how many times people who have come into the lodge for one of our community events have commented about, yeah, I saw those lights, and then I decided to, instead of walk by the building, come over to the little posting board about coming events. So these little steps to begin with are essential. And likewise, one of the other very simple things was, what can we do for no cost on a regular and recurring basis so that we can tell people, hey, come to the lodge on the second Wednesday of the month, because we have a potluck every month. And then we started trying to do a first Saturday game day. And we found out that first Saturdays don't work for gaming. So we moved it. After a few months of testing that hypothesis, we tested the hypothesis of Friday, first Friday nights, game nights. And that's been fantastic. And that's been growing by leaps and bounds. So these very simple steps have been key to opening up the lodge again. Has this addressed the initial part of the question of how did we get it up and going again? Or is there something else you'd like to dig deeper into?
No, I think that addresses the question really well. Yeah. Basically, you had some people join, and like you said, they were willing to experiment and try things to raise the profile of the lodge in your community.
Exactly.
And the other thing it sounds like is you guys are willing to try lots of little things. And if they don't succeed the first time, you're willing to try them again in a slightly different way to see if it's more viable, you know, being a different night for the gaming or whatever it is, and or putting up lights to try to draw attention. And so it sounds like it's no one secret thing. It's lots of little things.
One of the most important decisions that we made was we gave ourselves permission to fail. So that meant we were never going to spend so much that it would, you know, bankrupt us if it didn't work out. And we were never going to put so much of our soul into something that we would just be crushed and defeated. Everything that we did that was new was an experiment. And I can give some examples. We have this thing in San Jose called Viva Calle, where they shut down the streets to cars and you can go walk on it. And we said, okay, can we get one of the booths? And the first thing we did was we got an intersection. And we partnered with a couple other lodges in our area to just let people know that we are here in your community. We do stuff that you like, whatever. And the people who stopped by our booth, they mostly thought that was great. But what we discovered, we approached that by saying, what can we do for free? And we spent all our money like creating buttons and flyers that we could give out at the event, but we didn't pay to rent the space. And Viva Calle allowed us to do that because we volunteered to work the intersection at one of these places where cars were allowed to cross. And what we discovered was almost everyone was on a bike and went right past us. They had no reason to stop. And we had this nice booth out with a canopy that said Odd Fellows. Didn't attract much attention. But we did not give up on the idea of doing outreach. We just changed it. So we gave ourselves permission to fail, and then we tried something else, which did work. By one of our most successful outreach events was, again, at Viva Calle in September, because they do this more than once a year. And at that one, we were at an entertainment hub. And at the entertainment hub, people are getting off their bikes, they're walking, they're expecting to interact with people. We gave them fun things to do that we had learned in previous events would be popular. Our specific thing was a button making station. So people could come, the mostly kids, design buttons. We'd talk to the parents and we'd give them a flyer inviting them to a barbecue that we were hosting later. That was the first time, but not the last, that we saw the hall dining room completely full. We've done it again since, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that, but that was the first time we did it. And this was after an event that had basically, you know, by the numbers, flopped. So we failed once, we reevaluated, we did it again in a better way, and it was fantastic.
Now, that's a really important lesson for a lot of lodges out there. Because Ainsley, I know you've run into this and I've run into this. We talk to members of lodges all around the US and Canada, and it's usually younger members who join a lodge. They say, hey, I've got an idea, I want to do it. And if they don't get met by that initial resistance of older members saying, you can't spend the money, you can't do this, you can't do that, or we tried it once and it failed, if they do get the chance to try it out, they don't always get the results they're hoping for. So sometimes what happens is they do an event and there are not enough people there. And maybe five people show up and three of them actually stick around, and then nobody takes applications, and everybody says, well, that was a big failure, let's never do it again. But what you did, Brother Mason, is one of the most important parts, which is to go back and evaluate what you did and then say, okay, what kind of response did we get? Why did we get the kind of response we did? What can we change next time so that we get the response that we want? And that is a hugely important part of finding a way to make a lodge more interactive and more responsive to the community so that the lodge can go out and be successful. Everybody wants the lodge to be successful, but it's difficult to do when you try something once, you don't get the results you want, and then you go, okay, we're not going to try anything for the next 14 years. We're just going to all sit here in the kitchen and then wait until the lodge fails and everybody dies and our stuff gets sold on American Pickers.
Yeah.
Well, just to highlight what was present there, because the methodology of test and it's okay to fail because we get valuable data out of that, that requires actually demonstrating the virtue of friendship. Because if you still care about somebody, if they've tried something and failed, that's friendship. And if the idea of friendship is you either need to do something and if you don't succeed, you're SOL, so to speak, that is not friendship. And that's one of the things that's been our guiding light in all of these experiments, is we really keep coming back to the friendship, love, and truth. Because when people look to become Odd Fellows, we are the product, so to speak. And to the degree that we are consistent with who we say we are, we end up earning respect and power in our communities. So over and over again, we keep cycling back to friendship, love, and truth, because if we live consistently and earnestly by that, people will keep joining. And that's what our experience has been.
Now, here's a question for you. So you're getting all these people from the community interested in the lodge. I assume you probably just plop them down in seats in the dining room, show them the video of the degrees, and say, congratulations, you're Odd Fellows now, right?
Oh, no.
No, you're up. I find that hard to believe.
You'll wheel out the old TV cart.
You'll have to please explain to us how you're bringing all these people into your lodge and getting them connected with what you do.
First step is an interview. And the interview is a personal connection. And those people on their interview committee understand that their responsibility is also to introduce these potential new members and then new members to other members every time they show up to things until they don't need that anymore.
Okay, so you actually put some thought into the interview process and how everyone is supposed to interact before joining the lodge.
And joining is not a fast process. We're all volunteers. So especially at the beginning, like when Andrew and Jane started, it might be a while before the next degree night.
One thing that has worked extremely well, and this is something that I helped bring in from Masonry, was I spoke with people who were potential members. And for the degrees, I said, when you put in an application, we welcome you into our community by performing a total of 4 community plays, community theater. And these convey the heartfelt principles on which this community is founded and we would like to have you share in. And this is an acknowledgement of gratitude for you joining our community. And it's fascinating how conveying it as this is a community theater event that acknowledges you it's like I have found zero people who have responded negatively to that contextualization. It's just people go, wow, that sounds amazing. I'm really looking forward to this. And it's fascinating how many folks in Oddfellows that I've encountered who they really distance themselves from the degrees because they go, oh, that's kind of spooky. That's kind of weird. That's kind of odd. And it's like, yeah, it's in our name. We should totally lean into that.
Yes. Now, Debbie, you're going to talk about how you put on the degrees.
True Fellowship back in the day was a degree team. And we have all of the props. We have the robes and all of the regalia going back hundreds of years. So like the women have these long velvet robes that drag 4 foot, 5 foot behind us. So in our putting on the degree, we use the props and stuff that we've had for multiple years. We also in the lodge hall are in the district are used for the third degree due to the fact that we have stained glass windows that are artwork that came out of our building that we had in Santa Clara. And when our lodge hall was taken by eminent domain in Santa Clara, we took those stained glass windows out of the building and made shadow boxes. So during the degree work for the third degree, when it's time for that particular item to be lit, and one box can have up to five different light bulbs on it, pointing out the different parts of the verbalization. So we are used especially for the third degree because we have that. And our hall is huge with the original. It was a church when we bought it in the 60s. It has the original oak flooring. It's just a massive, it's a beautiful hall. My pride has been to keep it up and keep it maintained. And that's been my job for the last 20 years or 25 years while I've been in the Masons or in the Oddfellow group. Masons, I grew up in the Masonic order. Anyhow, so I was the first woman into True Fellowship Lodge. And I got into that lodge because of the fact that I worked for a general contractor. And I had the connections to do the repairs and the maintenance that was necessary to the lodge that some of the other members didn't have. So I'm the first and first woman to be in there and keep the longevity going in there. And since then, we've now have quite a few women, but for a long time, I was the only one.
And I do want to underscore Debbie's diligence in taking care of the lodge. Because one of the things that was so remarkable when I showed up was that the lodge had been prepped just assiduously, completely with intention to make it a community space. And that was Debbie putting her love and care into this building because she wanted it to be a place where community could come to life again. And if she had not put years of effort into repairing the pipes, repairing the kitchen, repairing the roof, all these things that were badly needed, it would not have been prepared to receive this resurgence. So it's because of her diligence that this space even existed at all. And so this is something that has been a priority since I came that I came in with, which is making sure that no matter how many new members we bring in, we really honor and care for the old members, because this is a continuity. This is a community that goes back to 1856 and is the oldest continuously existing Oddfellows lodge here in Santa Clara County. And we almost lost that if it weren't for Debbie Schuler and her husband and everything they did for almost a decade by themselves.
So it sounds like Debbie was able to be a good steward of the hall and do right by it to make sure that the foundation of what, you know, is what people are able to use as members is there and in place. Because we do see so many lodges, lodge halls that are in disrepair and members who are struggling very, very hard. Thinking of Stacey Thomason, you know, with Gold Hill, how she's struggling with, you know, getting the repairs and the updates done and going it fairly alone on that. And it is very exhausting. But to pivot back to doing degrees and stuff. So it obviously has you guys had a dwindling moment where there probably weren't very many degrees being performed, but you had all the amazing props, the robes, the costume bits and pieces and the stuff that usually gets either broken or scattered to the winds or somebody's grandkid gets hold of it. So did you guys have to do a lot of rehearsing to get back into performance form, or was it kind of, did you wing it a few times, or how well put together were your degrees when you got going again?
I want to give a shout out to Cupertino Lodge. I know this isn't the lodge shout out portion of the show, but I'm doing it anyway. Cupertino Lodge fortunately had their resurgence before we did. So they also got down to a point where there were just a few members. They came back in a strong way several years ago, and they managed to keep doing the live degrees for the initiation. Don't do all of them, but they did the live initiatory. So there was a period during COVID when no one was meeting together, and that unfortunately was when Debbie was my Debbie.
Who was initiated to Cupertino?
Well, you were initiated by the DVD. Except for that period, the Cupertino has continued doing the initiatory degrees. So they did the initiatory degrees right up until COVID. And then as soon as it was safe to do so, they did the initiatory degrees again. So we owe a lot of our ability to do those live degrees to Cupertino. Now, Cupertino doesn't do it alone. We have lots of members around the district who come and sort of surge to Cupertino on initiatory degrees nights. But it is primarily a Cupertino-led initiative. So we always have the live initiatory available. For first degree, Mountain View has taken it to be the first degree lodge for our district. Second degree recently came back after a long hiatus to Saratoga, another lodge in our district. And then we have resumed doing the third degree. And the first third degree in several years at our lodge was this past year, when it was on November 29th, I created a magnetic card with Ainsley, your beautiful symbolic Veritas, for all of the people who either participated in it or received the degree. And we are going to continue doing the third degree at our lodge three or four times a year based on just when the weekday falls at a certain point in the month. Basically, every time there is a month with five Wednesdays, the fourth Wednesday will be a third degree at True Fellowship.
So it seems like it's very important to work with the other lodges within one's district, is what you're saying, to help split up that labor to make sure every degree is done as thoroughly and clearly and presented as, I don't want to say as professionally as possible, but eloquently. There we go. That's a good way to put it. Because, yeah, definitely, if you don't have a good degree, it kind of, you miss the whole point of the whole thing because you're too distracted by the ridiculousness of a poorly performed degree. Are these lodges, I don't know how your district is laid out. Are they close together mileage-wise, so it's easy for, say, like people to travel to each different little location?
We're probably the center, and then everybody else is within 15 or 20 miles of us.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a very, very compact district then. Cause I'm thinking for me, the district that I'm the district deputy over, like it's only four of us lodges, but it takes an hour and a half to get to, about an hour and a half to get to the one on the opposite end of the district from me. Yeah, so
Our district used to consist of 8 different lodges. And in the time since then, we've picked up Mountain View, so we've added one more, but we've lost, and well, we have Volcano, which meets up at the Oddfellows home, but we've lost the Campbell Lodge, we lost the Santa Zé Lodge down on Ray Street. So we've lost a couple lodges, but the ones that we have are kind of remaining, are coming back.
Well, that's great. So at what point would you say the lodge started to turn around and go from being kind of static and not very interesting to being more active? Was it before COVID?
Andrew, was your join date?
Yeah.
It would be the day we got Andrew into our lodge.
You have to realize that there's a lot of things I've been trying throughout my life because, like I mentioned, there is this polarization in our society right now that it's like, as a student of history, the Civil War was a very unpleasant thing to experience. And I actively would like us to avoid such a thing. And I have been looking for the empirical evidence of how do we create leaders that can bridge this gap. And one of the best books out there talking about how we can do this is Robert Putnam's The Upswing. We just had, I'll let Mason talk about our extraordinary movie night at some point here, but The Upswing explains how during the last Gilded Age, we had a very, very low amount of social capital in our nation. People were fighting for themselves and people were nihilistic. When it's you versus the world, guess who's going to win every time? And that imparts this deep, bitter cynicism in the populace. And what Robert Putnam's research has shown is that it was out of that circumstance that people recognize that if we're going to make a difference in the world, it's going to be we, not I, that do it. And this is what Odd Fellowship is designed for. It is a vehicle so that we can find the good in each other, so that we can do good that overcomes the indifference in the world. And we've done it before. We are in the second Gilded Age. And if we lean into that and say, yeah, we are, and what we ought to be doing is putting the effort into the infrastructure, the effort into the leadership development, like literally bringing people into the lodge saying, yes, we want you to do things. What amazing things would you like to do? We would like to support each other in doing these things. And by the way, part of it is putting on these amazing degrees. And those degrees, having come from Freemasonry, which and I don't think anyone on this call is a Mason except me, right? Well, other than Mason Wolf. He's by birth.
But he's an operative Mason, not a speculative Mason.
Oh, somebody knows the lingo. So the thing about Masonry that's really extraordinary to me is the diversity of political opinion. I mean, my lodge and the lodges in this district, it's like there's people all over the map. And we love and care for each other. And what makes that possible is the ritual. It's the ability to play together and put on something special that lets other people realize they can play too. That is a powerful binding agent for community development. And the idea that the Oddfellows stepped away from that, thinking that that was the way to the future, was unnecessarily handicapping one of our greatest assets. And it's something where We've brought in people to the lodge who've never experienced ritual before. And when they experience the real thing where we do the whole thing, whole kit and caboodle, they leave inspired. It's like one of our members left the second degree, moved to tears. It's something where theater allows us to connect heart to heart. And to get rid of that is to remove the heart from our hand.
Absolutely.
That's beautiful.
Could not have said it better, brother. I think this is an excellent opportunity for us to take a quick break, listen to a message from our sponsor, the Heart and Hand Institute. And then when we come back, we've got another lodge shout out because there's a lot of great stuff happening in Odd Fellowship. And we like sharing it with all 12 of our listeners. And yeah. Three of those listeners are in the Sacramento area, apparently, just from looking at the download stats. Sacramento has been a real hot spot lately. So good work out there in Sacramento. So we're going to take a quick break and then be back with all of our friends here from True Fellowship 52 in San Jose right after this. Hello, brothers and sisters. Toby Hansen here from the Three Links Oddcast. I'm excited to tell you about a wonderful new book from the Heart in Hand Institute, The Emblems of Odd Fellowship by John Michael Greer. Brother Greer is an Odd Fellow and former member of my home lodge in Seattle. In fact, he was on my interviewing committee when I joined. He's also an acclaimed scholar and author of such books as Inside a Magical Lodge and Element Encyclopedia of Secret Societies. Brother Greer brings his considerable knowledge of esoterica and fraternalism to bear in this authoritative work about the emblems of Odd Fellowship. Richly illustrated with new renderings of the emblems by noted Odd Fellow artist Ainsley Heilich, the book represents the pinnacle of information for Odd Fellows and non-members alike. Anyone with an interest in Odd Fellowship would find boundless interest in this book. The release date is December 20th, so be sure and order your copy today. And don't forget a few copies for friends and family, and one for your lodge so you can share an essay on one of the emblems during Good of the Order at each meeting. The Emblems of Odd Fellowship is a book to be treasured for years to come. So order yours today.
All right. And we are back after our break from the Heart and Hand Institute. And we have a lodge shout out for our episode. And it is to Atlantic 107 of the Atlantic Provinces. And Atlantic 107 is a newly chartered lodge. They got their name from the lodge number one that was in the Atlantic provinces. And that lodge has long since gone to the wayside. And so they decided to revive the name and then just pick up where they left off with the numbering. So shout out to Atlantic 107.
Yeah, congratulations. One of the best things we get to share on the podcast is all of the new lodges that are getting chartered. In fact, spoiler alert, coming up a couple episodes from now, we're going to be talking about that new lodge down in Texas. But here tonight, we are talking with two Debbies and two Masons, all of them Odd Fellows and all of them members of True Fellowship number 52 in beautiful San Jose, California. So, Brother Mason, on the break, you and I were talking about an event you just had at your lodge, some sort of a movie night. What can you tell us about that?
So, it's actually largely thanks to this show that we showed Join or Die. So, I'd never heard of that movie until your podcast episode about it. After the episode, I got really excited about this because it seemed like the perfect thing that if we could bring it to an Odd Fellows Lodge, the movie literally opens in an Odd Fellows Lodge and it talks about the importance of community. So when I heard your interview with Pete and Rebecca Davis, I thought, wow, that would be a very exciting thing to have.
at the time, I was looking at doing that at the Cupertino Lodge because they already have a built-in projector and a large built-in screen and lots of parking. That event was back in October and it was successful, but it was time to bring it to our own lodge. So I approached the members about this and I said, this is something that I think we could do here. I think we could do it very well. And they agreed. They gave me budget to purchase the rights. And for the last 4 months, that has been like one of the biggest things on my plate. So we were able to get in touch with the mayor's office about this. It turns out, surprise, surprise, Andrew has a friend in the mayor's office, which was helpful. And we were able to get him to commit to come. And the reason he was willing to come is because it turns out our mayor, San Jose Matt Mahan, he'll appreciate being mentioned even if he never hears this. he was a former student of Dr. Robert Putnam, the movies about his research. Oh. And he got a lot of his understanding of how communities form and what benefit they have from that course. And then other courses that he took at Harvard as well. And then his subsequent career in various civil activities and eventually into politics. So this was something that he had mentioned in an NPR interview that I was able to catch. And I was like, whoa, okay, our mayor is also a fan of this researcher. And as I got to know the mayor's office better, I found out they all just refer to Robert Putnam as Bob. They're on a very familiar basis with him. They've all talked to him at some point. And I did not know this at the time, but when I invited the mayor to come to the showing, they mentioned to me that there is a program in San Jose. It's called Together SJ. It's currently has about 20 neighborhood associations. Their leaders are all in this program, which is based on the research of Robert Putnam. The idea is these people come together within their neighborhoods and figure out what is some issue or cause they'd like support with. And then they go to the city and they get support. And there's actually paid staff and they have a budget. And there's something magical about coming together over some cause that you care about and make common cause with your neighbors over and then get support and see things happen. So we mentioned the book, The Upswing, earlier, and it turns out that a huge impetus for the growth of this we mentality was people recognizing the problems around them and feeling empowered at the grassroots level, not from their leaders, but at the grassroots level to come together and do things about an incredibly wide array of different issues. So anyway, that's just to explain how the Together SJ ties in with Robert Putnam's research. So what the mayor's office did is they said, yes, he'll be available. And I asked, could the mayor give an introduction? Because I'd heard him speak enough to know that he was a legitimate expert on this topic, no surprise. So he gave an introduction to the film and he brought in a bunch of leaders from the Together SJ program. So we had, you know, neighborhood associations represented from all around the city in our lodge. Then on top of that, they said, can we partner with you so that we are also promoting it? Which was fun because that set off kind of a contest. So we were promoting it through our channels. They were promoting it through their channels. And I wanted to see who can bring more people in. So I sent flyers out to every single lodge in California. I sent flyers out to every lodge within 100 miles. I sent an email out, thanks to the Grand Master approving it, to every lodge in California. We sent flyers around our neighborhood, just knocking on doors, talking to people, handing them flyers. And we had about 1,000 of those flyers. So about 100 went out to the lodges and 900 went out to our neighbors. We had another event earlier in March, a corned beef and cabbage fry, which is a traditional event we've had for a long time. And we killed it. We had 50 people in. We had a live band. People love the food. By the way, shout out to Ben Schuler, Debbie's wife, husband, sorry.
I understand it's California.
Yes, and there's no judgment there, but he is her husband. And He is a fantastic cook and has been doing this for years. The food was amazing. Everybody loved it. We sold an entire portion of corned beef and cabbage for only $10. And because they are amazing at shopping, Ben and Debbie Schuler, we still managed to cover all of our costs, including advertising, with the corned beef and cabbage night. But it let us know that, hey, we're going to get a lot of people here at our next event, because it was a double-sided flyer. On one side, it had the corned beef and cabbage night. On the other side, it had the hamburger fry and movie night. So for about 50 people at that event, and then with the mayor helping, we managed to get 100 people into the lodge for the hamburger fry and movie night. Now, not everyone came for the hamburger fry who went to the movie, and not everyone who came to the hamburger fry went to the movie. We have some regulars who just like our hamburger fry and weren't as concerned with the movie. But we had 100 people in the lodge come through at some point. Cupertino, again, I already gave them a shout out, but their Junior Pass Noble Grand, Simona Benjamin, owns a Kona Ice Shaved Truck Fleet. She sent one of her trucks to our lodge for free, and people loved it. So it was just such a fun event all around. I got to shake hands with and get some selfies with the mayor. I know, Andrew, you got some selfies with the mayor, too. I think a lot of people got selfies with the mayor. He's good at that. We got a wonderful introduction to our film. And then after the film, we had a really good Q&A session with Rebecca Davis, the one half of the directing team. And one thing that I want to say out of that is, like Andrew was mentioning how we're going through a second gilded age, I think we're in a second upswing. I could be wrong. My evidence is anecdotal. But it's been getting a lot easier to just explain what the purpose of a community space is, why people might want to be in it, and have them say, oh, that sounds fantastic. Or even, yeah, give me an application for that. We only have 2 applications left in our lodge. We did not go to the Grand Lodge and pick up extra applications like we should have. We almost ran out of applications on Wednesday night.
Well, fortunately, your Grand Lodge office is not too far away.
No, I mean, if I have to walk it, it takes me about 15 minutes from the lodge.
Now, I have a follow-up question for that. It sounds like you're doing these great events and you're getting a lot of community interaction. What kind of promotion are you doing, and how is that promotion paying off when you have these events?
I will start answering that. So we have had to move a lot of the work out of our traditional meetings and into committees. And it only happens if we have enough volunteers and we have an events committee. So every potential event, thanks to Debbie Schuler, has a paper that comes with it that says, here's my first idea of how the event should go. This year, we've discovered that we need to more than just plan how the event should go. We should plan how the event should go if it's going wrong, and how to tune it down or stop it. But we also need to have a plan for if the event is going really, really well, and how to amplify it and have it have enough support from our own members. And so having one of our committees be a marketing committee, a marketing outreach committee, that's not a specific event, but a couple of individuals who say, I have this knowledge, and other event individuals who say, I will volunteer to walk around the neighborhood, and get them together. That's made a lot more things possible when we talk about marketing, because it allows us to market in more than one way. And I'm going to let Andrew, who is on our marketing committee, talk more about specific ideas of how we market, but he is the one who kicked off a lot of it. And then Mason has built a lot of it in capturing interest in our website building and our email list. So, Andrew?
Yes. As the chair of the outreach committee, it's been wonderful partnering with Mason in particular, because we've had a very good iterative refinement over the past 18 months or so. Because when we first tried things, we tried like trifolds. We tried palm cards. We tried all these different ways of creating something that you can push out there to the world. And the first place we were looking was doing outreach to our immediate neighborhood, because there is a practical reason for this, because if we get even a half dozen members that live within a mile radius of the lodge, it's much easier to have somebody do a quick check on the lodge if something's going on, if you have a pool of members that are nearby. That's an incredibly valuable thing for a community center. And that's when it came to marketing, that was one of the first things we did for the keyword. We changed it from the Odd Fellows Temple, because one of the first pieces of feedback I got was a friend of mine saying, my parents won't allow me to join because it says temple. And so we changed that. We looked around and said, okay, what are words that people understand? And we went with San Jose Odd Fellows Community Center Hall. And doing that change in the marketing, it got us new renters. It got us solvent. I mean, we'd been eating through our trust fund for years. And last year was the first time we had a net income in over a decade. And it's because of the new renters we brought in by doing this improvement in our outreach and marketing. And working with Mason again on these flyers, we went from the trifolds to the palm cards, and then we ultimately hit upon this brilliant idea. We had a bifold that had three major upcoming events on it and a description of the lodge. That was really, really well received. And the marquee event for that was an event I cared very deeply about called the Civic Forum. We had, for our district in San Jose, it was an open seat with four people running. And so instead of doing a debate, which is partisan and not to be tolerated in the lodge, we invited all four of them to a civic forum where we gave them 2 minutes to answer questions that had been submitted by the community to us without interruption. And the difference was we had not only a fact checker, but a friendliness checker. And their job was to speak truthfully about what they would do in addressing whatever the question was before them. And it was amazing. These people, the public came. We had more than 70 community members in attendance. The four candidates were there. We recorded it. We put it out on TikTok and YouTube. And it was just, the candidates loved it. The attendees loved it. They said, I wish more politics was like this. And it was because instead of having them fight each other, we had them open their hearts about what they stood for. And it was on that it really helped dovetail into building up for the join or die screening. And to its credit, of the top two candidates that are going on to November on the ballot, both of them were in attendance at the join or die screening. And what's fascinating is, yes, they're different in terms of their stances, but they both have a strong affinity for this community space we've been building. And both of them will be wonderful allies to help us, because we're a nonpartisan organization. We're here to help everyone if we can do so. And they recognize that because we created a space for it.
So it sounds like you guys have clearly just solved all the problems of your lodge. You have, everything is wonderful now. So where do you go from there? Do you take this outreach method? Obviously Cupertino has been a very big help in getting you guys kind of up and running again. So do you then kind of take the show on the road to another lodge in the district that might be struggling, or what's the next steps you guys have planned?
Well, we are not finished with making a method that is reproducible. I did mention that we've moved, most of the work that gets done is done by committee, and it's done between meetings. And I mentioned Andrew had given us a lot of direction with how to market and what to market, what our message is. But he also mentioned Mason. Mason is not just on the marketing committee, but he is also, he is our website committee with a bit of help from a few other people, but mostly he is our website committee. And that's going to give us a way to amplify what we're doing. And I'll have him explain what that's become for us.
What I was going to say was every time we have an event, obviously we do promote it online. So we, up until now, I've just been talking about the flyers. We have a Facebook page. The California Odd Fellows have a number of Facebook groups. Our district has lodges that all have Facebook pages. And so we can kind of search to one another's support and get the word out that way. You'd be surprised how many people have a friend of a friend of an Odd Fellow. And what we're also doing is we've created an email list. It's small right now. I'm sure there are many more people who are on the Three Links Oddcast list than on ours, but it is snowballing. Every single time we have an event, we add more people to it who say, hey, this was cool. I want to know what else you're doing. So we started this at the beginning of the year with the candidate forum. And like I said, each time we add more people. This last event, we added about 14 more people who hadn't already been on the mailing list. And, you know, next month we'll add more. And every time we have something, even if it's not that successful, it will build. One of the best examples of that is Andrew was talking about the game night. What he didn't mention was there have been plenty of game nights where it was just a couple people, where I was just sitting there wondering, is anyone going to show up, or someone else was sitting there wondering. But, you know, this month we had 21 people in there, which is enough to fill every table with someone playing some game, about five people to a game, four different tables, or, you know, so it grows. And that's one of the things that I really like to drive home to those people who are struggling in a kitchen table lodge, because I know getting it going is hard. It was not easy, although Andrew brought in a lot of people who were willing to just take his word for it. And so we had people, but our initial events were not particularly successful, but they continued growing a little bit and then more and then more. And when you talk about where we want to go from here, I look at Davis. So you guys all know Davis Lodge. It's huge. They have 400 some people. And if you, depending on the day you ask, it'll be something different. And the reason it's so big isn't because they're constantly doing outreach advertising. It's because they are so relevant in their community that everyone in the city of Davis knows about the Odd Fellows. And lots of people who aren't already members are at least familiar with some of the events they've done. I was there back in October for the zombie bike ride event. It was amazing. The entire city was getting excited and wrapped up in this event. I see that as the eventual point that the San Jose Lodge will get to. San Jose has sort of a similar culture, or at least parts of it do, to Davis. And Davis used to be a struggling lodge too. But that's the thing with the snowball. If you're willing to keep making it bigger, eventually its own mass is what's driving it forward. They don't have to advertise themselves anymore because the entire community knows them and is excited about the stuff that they do there. That's my vision for San Jose. I mean, we might not see that level of success in my lifetime, but I see no reason why we wouldn't eventually get there so long as we can continue snowballing forward. And then Andrew and I are also very interested in strengthening lodges around us. And there is one lodge in particular that recently gave up its charter. This was the lodge in Gilroy, and that was just last year. And we think we could bring it back. So, Andrew, why don't you take over from here? Because you're the one who's made so many of those contacts down in Gilroy.
Okay. So, a few things can... I omitted two key things from the earlier chat about outreach and bringing people in, and then I'll segue that point into Gilroy. So the first thing is, in terms of the flyers we've been putting out, what we've found after 18 months of trying is the two-sided quarter sheet in full color. This is the most cost-effective way of promoting the lodge that you can have, because what you do is you have two events, one on the front, one on the back. And when you hand this to somebody, it gives them two possible points of entrance into the lodge community center. And the price point for what you get out of it is really extraordinary. And as Mason highlighted, the first event on that flyer helps you gauge how successful the second event will be on that same flyer. So these things are tied together, and it's just highly recommended that that be what people try. Try other things as well, but that's what we found really, really works. The other part is, in marketing, they talk about how many touches do you have to make with somebody in order to have them buy your product. When I was running for office, getting somebody to vote for you requires 1 to 3 touches on average. That's that. But to get somebody to join, the statistic is 3 to 7. And so part of our strategy that's been creating this pipeline of people coming in, the part of our strategy to get people coming in is having these regular reoccurring events. And we've started to see us reaping fruit from this in terms of people who came to our game nights, came to our burger fries, and just went, you know, I should be a member by now. And they put in an application. One of them I was on the interview committee for. And when I told her, you do know that there's these theatrical degrees we put on, she went, I didn't know about those. That sounds amazing. She was like utterly stoked. And it's amazing when you just create a place that's really inviting, that feels like friendship, love, and truth made manifest. People want in. And that ties into Gilroy. Right now, there's one person down that's willing to be a refounding member down there who's been the advocate trying to keep it going. And then there's two of our members of our lodge that are now third degree members, the Gentiles, and they live down there. And then there's the leadership committee that we've created in our lodge. And the leadership committee is about empowering Odd Fellows and communities in general with what we know about leadership development techniques that help you go from just me trying to do a thing to us doing something amazing. And that is something that I've been networking, trying to find partners with down there. And I have one of the city council members of Gilroy who's interested in partnering with us to put on some sort of event to kickstart the lodge down there again, because she's very aware that these third places away from work and home are an endangered species. And when they go away, they cost millions of dollars to get set up again. It's a much more cost-effective proposal to spend a little bit of money to keep one going or restart one that might disappear than needing to start one from scratch. So we're building the people there to take this action. And in the next 12 months, we will have some sort of event, likely a join or die screening, down there in Gilroy as a way to kick this off and engage the community. Because it's the whole thing of, you can't have success in a vacuum. If you're not giving this stuff away to others, you're going to lose it yourself.
Now, speaking as a past grandmaster who put in some effort to save lodges, I can tell you, you're absolutely right. As long as there is still a framed charter hanging on the wall, it is way easier to put in the time and investment to revive or revitalize that lodge than it is to start from scratch. because starting from scratch, you've got all kinds of challenges to overcome. I mean, not everybody just shows up in town with their tattoo gun and buys an Oddfellows Hall. That's as common as that is, it doesn't always happen. And you know, you guys down in California, you know that there are real estate developers hiding under every single rock and in every single crevice, just waiting to turn that into a $1.5 million condo building where, you know, it's going to be unaffordable for anyone to live there. And it's like, we're losing all of these places. So if you have a chance to revive the lodge in Gilroy, take it, do it, absolutely work on that and make it happen.
Well, and we not only own the lodge hall that we are in, but we have a house next door that when we bought the church came with the parsonage. So that is a rental property. And then next door on the other side is this great, humongous, empty lot. So yes, we get approached by developers all the time being asked to sell that lodge hall. It's like you said, I mean, it's amazing how many people want to buy that. The one thing I think that saves us is that our particular area is zoned as being Victorian, so that they would have to spend a lot of money in order to put something in there, which does save us on a lot of that. So it's very restricted. We have a Victorian house sitting right next to the empty lot, and it's been sitting empty for over a year. So you know that there's reasons that people are not developing. So
yeah, and that's a whole different issue to talk about, the challenges of maintaining an old building. And you know, my home lodge is in the Ballard neighborhood of Seattle, and I cannot count the number of flyers that get stuck into the door handle from developers who say, your building could be worth $5 million. It's like, thank you, but Odd Fellowship is priceless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is all fantastic. Is there anything else that you want to share with all of our listeners about what you're doing there at True Fellowship Lodge?
I think that one thing, and that my job in this particular situation is, we have these two guys that are wonderful about coming in and wanting to do everything. And it's my job to mind the pennies and the nickels and the dimes and to keep everything within a budget. Realize that, yes, there are some projects that once you start them and the costs start rolling in, they're not exactly as they're portrayed in the beginning, that you have to be willing to let some items go. We had a lantern festival last year that we went down and took part in, and that was fun, but it but then this year we went back and they wanted to charge us like $800 just to put up a booth for all day.
Well,
our lodge doesn't have that kind of sustainability to spend $1,000 to go sit in a booth so this is my job. I watch the piece. I watch the pennies, dimes, and nickels. And we were one time a lodge that through investment had $770,000 invested in Morgan Stanley. One stock drop took that down to $375,000. Then we had the roof go out. Then we had the plumbing go out on both the house next door and the hall, and to keep maintaining. We're down to now where we have $80,000. Unfortunately, we don't get the help from Grand Lodge that we have asked for. But it's watching the nickels and dimes. That's not to say that we didn't get a music school in here and that needed better lighting in our big lodge hall, and in order to accommodate them, we put all brand new lighting in the lodge hall for $2,000. So we are, give us the money, invest the money in us by renting, and we will pay it back by giving you what you need to take care to do your project. So I think that's what we need to be mindful of as well.
So two things, on reflection. The first is friends, because the place where I started helping rebuild the lodge was reaching out to my friends network. And when I would talk with them, I would propose it not as, hey, help me save this dying organization. That never left my lips. What I said was, we're refounding this community space, and we need somebody who is creative like you. It's like, whatever it is that makes that friend shine, acknowledge that thing, saying it's like, you're really creative, you're really inventive, you're really gregarious, you're really into games, you're really into puzzles, you're really into cooking, whatever it is. It's like, that is a skill that this community would thrive with you not only being part of it, but you'll be able to find other people who share that with and support you in what you're doing. One of my friends, who after many months of discussions, she finally put in her application, it was finally successfully communicating that having a ready group of people who like doing fun things, that all you have to do is saying, hey, I'm going to be planning one of those escape room events a month from now. Does anybody want to go with me? Can we make this a lodge event? And suddenly you'll have all the people you want for an escape room event. And she went, oh, that makes sense. Likewise, she likes art. And it's like, well, do you want to do an art show? We have space for that. And it's amazing how people think in this mindset of, how do I buy the thing that I need so that I have the thing I need so that I can do the thing? Rather than going, wow, I could be part of a community that has the thing and has people. And just by being part of it, the things I enjoy most suddenly become easier. And my friends keep putting in applications, and some of them I've been talking with for more than a year, kind of in the negotiating phase. And then they show up and they're already ready to just put in an application. They just need to kick the tires and they're in. And that's the thing that I would really recommend to anybody taking on this project of revitalizing a lodge, is the first principle is friendship. It's like, work on articulating the value of this community to your friends. And not only that, they're going to give you feedback that allows you to hone that pitch. So when you start talking to neighbors that you don't have as strong a relationship with, you'll be able to say it in a way that they understand and receive and have interest in. So it was friends, and yes, there was some other thing that I was going to mention, but I've forgotten it now. Friends, I think, is most important.
It is about a new motto.
What?
It is about a new motto.
Yay. Yeah, that was one of the more delightful chapters. Was we need some way to convey what we are. So we talked about mottos, and after brainstorming, the one we settled on was friends you can count on.
I like that.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when it comes to third spaces, the social scientists have found that there's one quality that is the easiest test to find out if a place is a successful third place, and it's wholesomeness. Literally, if you build a wholesome place, people understand what it is intuitively.
Well, that's excellent. Thank you so much. Anything else you'd like to share with the listeners before we go to our Odd Podge?
I am excited about the encampment. So the encampment never left. We never closed our encampment. It's small. I joined it this past August. And then in September, of course, I joined you up at the degree at Han Farm, which was a delight. And I was able to, with Debbie Schuler's help, who obviously is in the encampment, she's the grand patriarch of California, I brought back live degrees for the first time in our encampment since I don't know how long. We did the Golden Rule degree earlier this month. As a matter of fact, this month has been a great month for degrees. We had the second degree in Saratoga. We had Golden Rule degree there in San Jose. And we had a Rebecca degree where my niece became, I guess, the youngest Rebecca in the county, at least, if not the state.
So she's only in her 50s, is what you're saying?
Yeah, she's a delight. She's a 17-year-old, and she is now a Rebecca. She, like my daughter, went through Theta Row.
I remembered the other thing.
Oh, yes. What is your other item?
It was working with the Masons.
Yes.
I've been talking with many of my Masonic brothers. In fact, about a half dozen of which have joined my Oddfellows Lodge. We call each other double brothers. The odd Masons or the free fellows is another. And the fun thing about it is the Masons have about 300 or so buildings up and down the state of California, and Oddfellows have about 100 buildings up and down the state of California. And I've been talking with the Masonic Grand Lodge, who is interested in working with the Oddfellows Grand Lodge in California to create reciprocal agreements around lowered rent rates. Because one of the things that when you look at the map, there are, of course, places that there are Oddfellows and Masonic lodges close together. In fact, Masonic lodges that meet in our Oddfellows Lodge. And this is where the idea came. We have three.
San Andreas, Sons of Solomon, and Richmond C. Marshall.
We have three. So this is something where I went, this could be a working model. And it's something that that my Grand Lodge with the Masons are interested in, because the idea of creating cross-fraternal connections, it's always easier to have two people lifting each other up, pulling towards each other, rather than just pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps. And the idea of this came from studying the 19th century and how many people were in both orders. And one was seen as an order for self-improvement, the Masons, and the Oddfellows. The fundamental question of it is, how do we serve our community? And so that very extroverted looking out, what are the needs that need addressing? Let us address those needs, whether it be burying the dead, tending to the sick, educating the orphan, or relieving the distressed. So understanding that nature and leveraging previous dynamics has been something I've been working on as well, which has helped us.
That's fantastic. And I love the idea of working together with the Masons, because that's been a recurring theme on this season of the Three Links Oddcast. We've heard from so many places where Masons have discovered Odd Fellowship and said, yeah, this is the thing I have been looking for all these years, and I finally found it. So that is fantastic. And I, like you say, I know there are a lot of little towns in farming communities, in timber communities, fishing villages, all of those things that we have here on the West Coast, where it's a small town. And originally, maybe 100, 150 years ago, they had enough money to erect one fraternal hall and everybody met there. In the little tiny town of Wilkeson, Washington, there's an Elks Lodge, not an Elks Lodge, an Eagles Lodge. And they have the lights up on the proscenium for whatever group was using the hall that night. So the Eagles met there, Knights of Pythias, the Improved Order of Red Men, a bunch of other like fraternal groups. They all met in the same building because the town was small and they could pool their resources and build one building. Well, the Eagles are the only ones left meeting in that hall. But at one time, a whole bunch of fraternal groups met there. So to be able to do that now in the 21st century is a fantastic idea.
So I have to shout out that, Andrew, I don't know where you got your number of 100 lodges, but Ben and I have spent the last 35 years together traveling up and down this state in multiple heads of the order and working with the juniors and stuff. And every small town in our state, especially in the Sacramento and San Jose area, is built around an Oddfellows Hall or a Masonic Hall. They're not all active now, but if you go to anywhere in any small town, you will find that they built the Oddfellows Hall first, and then they built the community around it. Because we've been to Lompoc, we've been to Santa Barbara, we've been to all of these other places throughout the state because of the travels with the lodge, that we have seen all of these places and been in some of the halls that are full of bats. And, they literally had one where Rebecca President was leading a meeting and had a swarm of bats fly up her formal skirt. So, there are several lodges, only they've been forgotten because the lodge defolds and then the building is gone, or it's sitting there with the three links on it. And nobody knows what those three links represent. I mean, so this was part of our rejuvenation project a while back through the Grand Lodge. They were going to, Tim Brown, when I was president, that was his project, is to go revitalize some of these lodge halls and bring them back into existence. Unfortunately, it didn't work too well, but we do have a lot of them out there.
Our height, wasn't it about 835 Oddfellows lodges in the state of California?
We had probably 15,000 to 20,000 members in the state. I mean, and that was when I started. I mean, 30 years ago, we had thousands of members. Now I think we're down to 5,000. I mean, we've just dropped so significantly. However, California, because of its size and stuff, is still one of the largest sources of membership out of the whole United States. Our particular lodge has the majority of the membership for the whole Sovereign Grand Lodge.
What you highlight is something that is part of the reason we created the leadership committee, because we have 5,000 members, which is huge compared to the nation right now, but Oddfellows used to be the largest fraternal organization in U.S. history, and I sincerely believe it can get back to being that again. It has a lot of tools at its disposal that address some key human concerns we're facing here in the early 21st century. And if we were just effective at communicating that we have this available, I think we would be able to see the surge that Odd Fellowship saw in the 19th century. I did the math with Michael Greenziger, and they were averaging about 20% growth per year, year over year, for the first 50 years of Odd Fellowship in the United States. And if we reproduce that, I was at a Bruce Springsteen concert last night, and I was in a stadium that was packed to the rafters with about 23,000 people. And I was looking at that and I was going, wow, less than one quarter of the stadium is all the Oddfellows in the state of California right now. But if we had 20% growth for the duration of this decade, by the end of 2030, we would be able to fill that entire stadium.
When I started in the Oddfellows back in the early 1990s, it took the Los Angeles Coliseum and it took the Reading Convention Center to be the places where we had our Grand Lodge, because we filled those buildings with our Oddfellows for Grand Lodge. It was absolutely filled to the hill. So, and that would be something to work for, to regain. I mean, yes, it was amazing. The pageantry of the tuxedos and the formals and all of that stuff that we used to have. Unfortunately, it's kind of bit the dust when we went into newer generations. But the women, like my closet that's full of the beaded evening gowns, you know, and I'm not giving them up, but I'm the pageantry that made us so famous and so popular has dropped by the wayside. If we started bringing that back, it might bring, you know, something back. Then we just had a Regency ball at the Lodge Hall that we paired up with the Bears group. And that's all people getting dressed into, unfortunately, I couldn't be there, into the costume dresses and like, you know, the era. And it was a big success. So I think we're starting to get generations back again that like doing the dressing up, which that would be great.
I want to see us get back to that level of success and continue to push forward. That's why we created the leadership committee. And our first goal is to get Gilroy up and running again and continue growing the lodge and getting the word out about how to do it. Because what we're doing here is completely and 100% reproducible by any other lodge listening to this podcast. If you are alive and have a pulse and a willingness to try, just so long as you don't take the failures seriously and you're willing to keep trying, you will find a way forward. And part of the leadership committee is we want to get resources available so that anybody who wants to try that daring act of getting the community roaring back to life, we want to give them all the best empirically based resources that have them thrive.
Well, that is fantastic. You guys are doing some great work there in San Jose and all around the state of California. Let's hope that your efforts are successful and soon California has 50,000 members. Of course, you might get a little bit of pushback from the rest of Sovereign Grand Lodge if you had that many members. They would be like,
Well, we'll just have to lift up every boat.
So I want to thank all of you for appearing on this episode. And now we're going to go to the Odd Podge where we can share whatever we feel like. And Andrew, you look so excited. I want you to share your Odd Podge first.
Well, the thing that I'd like to shout out to any lodge in any jurisdiction across this North American continent and beyond, the Foundation for Ontological Leadership Education. They have a course called Being a Leader and the Effective Exercise of Leadership. It is definitively of any of the courses I've taken in the last quarter century about leadership development, management, and community investment. This is the one that brings all the pieces together. It's 9 sessions. Sometimes it's spaced a week apart. Sometimes it's an intensive like the one I took at UCLA last summer. It has all the parts. If you earnestly want to lead your lodge back to prosperity, that would be the place to get your toolkit. And again, it's the Foundation for Ontological Leadership Education. It's dynamite.
All right, Sister Debbie, what do you have for us?
Well, we have had a lot of events that have brought new people into our lodge. And we have an upcoming one that, in the same way that a lot of our most popular and successful events have been, is not just True Fellowship putting on, it's True Fellowship together with, and one of our brothers or sisters being a member of another organization. So we had recently had a Bears dance, SJ together. These are some events that happened successfully because they were not just True Fellowship events. This one is being held together with Braver Angels. It's going to be April 13th. And it's called Depolarizing Within. And it's basically the Braver Angels group is focused on helping people bridge the partisan divide. And what better way to do it than in an Odd Fellow space where you focus on who people are as a person and finding their value as a friend and setting aside the political differences. So we felt that that was something that we could help use our space for. And one of our brothers, one of our sisters is a part of the Braver Angels. And so they're taking the lead on setting up this event, but it was important to them. We were able to vote on it and say, here's the restrictions of what we need to make it a successful event. And so we had quite a few of our members volunteer to help put this on. And things are going well with the planning for it. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, that is fantastic. What a great thing to partner up for. All right, Brother Mason, what have you got for us?
Okay, I can break some news.
Oh, breaking news. We love breaking news here on the podcast.
I haven't gotten the flyer out yet, so this is the first time announcing it in a public way, but we are going to have a rededication for the cave degree on Sunday, July 7th. I just got the email confirmation from our incoming grandmaster that he'll be able to be there because we wouldn't be able to do it without him. So we're going to have a dedication based on the same ceremony that we have in the book. Your grand secretary's got it if you don't. It's for whenever you build a new Oddfellows Lodge, you dedicate it with this ceremony that's got the grandmaster and the whole staff. So I am really looking forward to that. And we are getting very close on the fundraising necessary to finish the reconstruction, but we felt comfortable saying that, yes, we are going to have this rededication. We can do this.
How much are we talking, Mason?
You want me to give specific numbers on the podcast? And I can give numbers now, but they'll probably be wrong by the time the podcast comes out. So right now we're about $5,000 short from the entire goal, which means we basically raised about 90% of our original goal over this past, the years that we've been raising it. So we're doing well.
Well, that's fantastic. And thank you for
wants to donate, write a check to the Grand Lodge of California and make in the memo cave fund.
So I do get to take credit for as being Grand Patriarch. I did put Mason in charge of my degree team, or as one of my members of my degree team, and put him in charge of getting the first encampment degree to be held at the cave. We've normally had it in Oddfellows Lodges, either up in Point Arena or down in Fresno, but this will be the first year that we actually do an encampment degree at the cave.
That is the plan for September.
Oh, nice. That's wonderful. And thank you for sharing that breaking news here on the Three Links Oddcast. It gives us a little bit of journalistic integrity. I'm going to go next for my Odd Podge. This has been a busy week for me with Odd Fellowship because I did two different nights of degree work this week. On Wednesday at my associate lodge, we conferred the initiatory degree and the three degrees for a handful of candidates that we had there because things are really hopping in Buckley. And then the next night on Thursday, I went to my home lodge up in Seattle, and we did a full, complete, dramatic presentation of the first degree. Now, one nice thing about my home lodge in Seattle is that we had a big influx of money about 25 years ago, and the members decided to invest in the lodge. So they did a lot of much needed upgrades and repairs of the building. They also did upgrades of our ability to do fraternal work. So they bought a complete set of all brand new degree robes from the official regalia supplier for Sovereign Grand Lodge. So we have these beautiful, pristine robes that are actually sized for 21st century human beings, not for the 5'6", 120-pound man of the 19th century. I cannot tell you how many times I've tried to do degree work and could only tie the robe around my neck, but I actually had a robe that actually fit me, and I could actually wear the robe and the helmet and carry the shield and do all the work. It was some of the best degree work I have seen in a long time. And so props to my home lodge, Ballard Alki number 170 in Seattle, because they have been practicing the degrees. They perform them regularly in full dramatic form. And it shows on a night like Thursday, when we took an entire hour to act out the complete first degree. And it was such a moving experience for the three members who got to move up from the initiatory to the first degree afterwards. And also props to the members who actually had remembered all of the things about the degree and were able to give the unwritten work of that degree in Open Lodge before we conferred the degree. It was an amazing night of fraternalism. And I would hope that every lodge is able to experience something like that at some point, because it really is fantastic.
Okay, I'm going to do a shout out. And I'm going to say for all of the third degree members out there, remember that you only get out of an organization what you put into it. If you have reached the third degree, step up into the next degree of and the encampment. Step up into the next degree of the canton. These are our degrees that we can get out there in our fezes, in our uniforms, and be seen. I will be at the Tomb of the Unknown in May representing, but I will be in my encampment fezes. I am there as the Grand Patriarch. But these are the branches for us that are similar to the Shriners for the Masons. These are ours that get out there and you see something that's different and you ask what it's about. So don't just stay at your lodge level. Don't just stay at your state level. Get involved in the other degrees of Odd Fellowship.
That is wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. All right, Ainsley, what do you have for the Odd Podge?
So continuing on my district tour of the world's okayest district deputy.
You excel at adequacy.
Yes. I will be doing the installations of my original home lodge of the Arthur Lodge this coming Tuesday. And I'm really excited because one of the new members wants to go with me because I asked, you know, people in lodge if they wanted to come and help fill out some of the roles of the district deputy grand marshal and all the different installing officers. So I'm really excited because the new members are, you know, so excited that they, instead of waiting an additional extra week for our regular meeting to happen, they're just going to jump right on in and come and attend an installation with me. So they haven't been to a regular meeting yet. So I'm pretty excited about that.
That's fantastic. Well, that pretty much wraps up this episode of the Three Links Oddcast. Now, for our next episode, Ainsley, you like some controversy?
I love it.
You like something that's going to generate a whole bunch of angry emails here that you're going to have to read and respond to?
Each one individually with love and care.
That's right. You'll be responding to each of these angry emails we get in the spirit of friendship, love, and truth, because for our next episode, we're going to talk about the Lord's Prayer. Ooh. Why do we say it in lodge, and are we really non-sectarian if we're including that in our ritual? We love controversy here at the Three Links Oddcast because nothing generates downloads like controversy. So if you're listening to this, be sure and set your podcatcher to catch that next episode of the Three Links Oddcast because, oh boy, it's going to be a doozy.
It's going to be a spicy one.
Yeah, we're going to get plenty of angry emails about that. So on behalf of all of us here at the Three Links Oddcast, we want to thank you all for listening. Bye-bye, everybody.